Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going on before. Christ the royal master leads against the foe. Forward into battle, see him.
Oh, and we have all the foes assembled against us out there today, brothers and sisters. But it doesn't matter. Yahweh is with us. Who can be against us? Shalom Aleichem to all my pure-blooded white Christian Israelite brothers and sisters out there. The show is Word for Word. I am Pastor Steve, and this show is for Monday, the 10th of April, 2017. It is the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And today we will be going into the book of Jonah. And it is actually Yonah in the Hebrew. There is no J, it is a Y. Yonah, and it means dove. Pardon me. But before we do that, I want to remind everybody that Eurofolk Radio is offering a Hebrew feast day calendar according to Enoch's solar calendar. Brother Hebert of North Carolina put this together for us. And it's beautiful. It's full color on heavy gloss paper. And each page depicts scenes from the Bible and from our Anglo-Saxon heritage. And if you would like a copy and get a beautiful calendar and help support EFR, just click on the donate button at the top of the page and send us a donation of $20 or more to get your calendar. That helps us. It helps you. It's got the Gregorian dates in it, the standard calendar dates, and the Hebrew dates. Please put the word calendar in your message and give us your mailing address, and you will soon get your calendar. All right, let's get into the book of Jonah. I will be pronouncing it properly. I will not be saying Jonah, because there is no J, and it's not pronounced like that. So let's get into this. A little history before we launch into the actual four-chapter book. Jonah's birthplace is in 2 Kings 14, 25, and it is Gath HaChefer. HaKefer, 1622. That's the name of the place. And it was plus or minus 2 miles northeast of Nazareth. Nineveh, not Nineveh, the Jews changed it to a V. They tampered with the writing. That's 5210. Nineveh was the Assyrian capital city. And the center city of a three-city complex. Khorsabad, Nineveh, and Nimrud were the three cities. The king probably was living at Khorsabad, not Nineveh proper. The complex was so large that it took 3 days to walk across. This is a huge city. This is shown in chapter 3, verse 3. And Assyria was a threat to Israel, and Jonah was not too anxious to go to Nineveh to give Yahweh's warning to the people he considered to be enemies. He was happy to hear of the coming destruction, though, but when Yahweh relented because of Nineveh's repentance, Jonah was displeased greatly. Their repentance didn't last, however, and the destruction was postponed only about 150 years until around 612 BC. So, I'm looking for something here, just a second. He was rebellious against Yahweh, basically because he was afraid. So let's get into chapter 1, verse 1. Now the word of Yahweh came to Yonah, 3:1-4, in your Strong's, the son of Amittai, 5:7-3. Saying, and here's Yahweh speaking, let me clear my pipes here for a second. Arise, go to Nineveh, that's 52:10, that great city, and cry, 71:21, against it, because their wickedness, 7:4-5:1, is come up before me. Verse 3. But Yonah rose up to flee, 1:2-7:2, to Tarshish. That's 8:6-5:9. All right, now Tarshish was a mining town of the Phoenicians in what is now Spain. But Yonah rose up to flee to Tarshish from the presence of Yahweh and went down to Yafo, 3:305, and that's now called Joppa. And he found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare of it and went down into it to go to Tarshish with them from the presence of Yahweh. Like he's going to go anywhere in the universe and Yahweh's not going to be there. Verse 4. But Yahweh hurled, 2:9-4, a great wind into the sea, and there was a great tempest, 5:5:9:1, in the sea, so that the ship, 5:9:1, was thought to be broken, 7:6:6:5. Verse 5. Then the mariners, 4:4:1:9, were afraid, and every man cried to his Elohim, that's their little gods that they worshipped, and hurled the cargo, 3:6:2:7, that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it from upon them. But Yonah had gone down into the far end, 3:4:1:1, of the ship, and he had laid down and was fast asleep, 72:90. Verse 6, so the shipmaster, that's 7:7:2:7, added with 2:2:5:9, and means literally great sailor, came to him and said to him, what, are you sleeping? Arise, call upon your Elohim. Perhaps that Elohim will think upon us, 6:2:4:5, that we do not perish, 6. He was equating Yahweh with these little g gods of stone and wood. He didn't know Yahweh at that point. Verse 7, and everyone said to his fellow, come, and let us cast lots, 14:86, that we may know on account of, 7:9:4:5, whom, 43:10, this evil is upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell upon Yonah. Let me get a drink of this hot coffee here for a second. Oh, that's marvelous. Then they said to him, "Tell us, please, for whose cause is this evil upon us? What is your occupation?" 4399. "From where do you come? What is your country? Of what people are you?" They were really getting excited and questioning him. And he had to tell them, you know. Pardon me. "And he said to them, I am an Ebri." 5680. That means a Hebrew. That's the name, Ebri. "From Eber. And I fear Yahweh, the Elohim of the sky, which has made the sea and the dry land." Uh-oh. "Then," verse 10, "then the men were greatly terrified." That's 3372 and 3374 put together for an emphatic. "And said to him, why have you done this? Because the men knew that he fled," 1272, "from the presence of Yahweh, because he had told them." Verse 11, "Then they said to him, what shall we do to you so that the sea may be quiet," 8367, "from upon us?" Because the sea was going on, that's 1980 as walking, and was stormy, 5590. Verse 12, "And he said to them, take me up and hurl me," 2904, "into the sea. So shall the sea become quiet from upon you, because I know that for my sake this great storm," 5591, "is upon you." He admitted that. About time. "Nevertheless," verse 13, "the men rowed," 2864, "hard to return to dry land, but could not because the sea was going on and the storm and was stormy against them." Pardon me. Verse 14, "they cried out to Yahweh." The name had been revealed to them. "And says, please, O Yahweh, we beseech you, do not let us perish for this man's life, and do not lay innocent blood," that's 5355, "innocent, upon us. For you, Yahweh, have done as it pleased you," 2654. Verse 15, "So they took up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased," 5975, "from raging," 2197. Verse 16, "Then the men feared Yahweh greatly and offered a sacrifice to Yahweh and vowed vows." Converts. Verse 17. "Yahweh had prepared," 4487, "a great," 1419, "fish," 1709, "to swallow," 1104, "Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly," 4578, "of the fish 3 days and three nights." As Yeshua Messiah would be in the inner parts of the earth 3 days and three nights until he rose. And fish 1709 is dog. D-A-G. The root of Dagon, 1712, that was a deity of the Philistines. And belly is me'eh in the Hebrew, 4, 5, 7, 8. They were all worshiping their pagan gods and praying to them, and nothing happened. Okay, that this chapter's over. But when they called on Yahweh, he did something. When all these little stone and wood things wouldn't do a thing. And imagine the story they had to tell when they returned to their pagan homes. And the might and fame of Yahweh spreads even further. Now, verse 17, the great fish is of unknown species. Now, there has been some conjecture that the great fish was the name of a merchant vessel called the great fish, but it is not scripturally shown to be so. So I want to nip that in the bud. Where people say, oh, a ship picked him up. Does not say that anywhere. So you can just forget that. If it says a great fish with all of Yahweh's power, why not? If he can create an entire universe, what limit can his power have? Let's stop trying to limit Yahweh and make him into a smaller deity. Here's chapter 2. Then Jonah prayed, 6:4-1:9, to Yahweh his Elohim from the belly of the fish. Verse 2, and said, I cried out, 7:1-2:1, from my distress, 6:8-6:9, to Yahweh. And he answered me from the belly of Sheol, 7:5-8:5. That's the land of the dead and its inhabitants. I cried from the belly of Sheol. I cried, 7:7-6:8. You heard my voice. Verse 3. You cast me into the depths in the heart of the sea, and the strong currents, 5:1-4, surrounded me, 5:4-3:7. All your billows, 4:8-6:7, and waves, 4:8-6:7. Same word, used double like that. It doesn't mean billows and billows, it means billows and waves. Passed upon me. Verse 4. Then I said in my heart, in other words, thought, said to himself, I am driven from before your sight, yet I will look again towards your holy temple. This is the time of the temple. It was in existence. I need a hit of coffee here. Verse 5, the waters engulfed me, 6:6:1, to my soul. The deeps, 8:4:1:5, surrounded me, 5:4:3:7. The reeds, 5:4:8:8, were bound, 2:2:8:0, about my head. Okay, these are sea reeds, that seaweed and all that stuff. Floating detritus floating in the sea was in the all around him and just wrapped themselves around him. And verse 6, I sunk 3:3:8:1 to the extremities 7:0:9:5. That is the bottoms of the mountains. Because mountains start up on land. They go down in the sea, and they bottom out down in the sea, and then the sea, you know, goes on from there. The bars, 1280, that's bar, like bars on a gate for security, of the land, 776, were about me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, 7845. That's Shakath. O Yahweh, my Elohim, when my life fainted, 5848, within me, I remembered Yahweh, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. Verse 8. Those that pay regard to, 8104, empty, 7723, vanities, 1892, forsake, 5800, their favor, 2617. Now, those are the empty vanities here as false idols. And they forsake Yahweh's favor. Like the men on the ship that had their little G gods that were praying and nothing happened. But when they prayed to Yahweh, different story. Verse 9, but I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving, 8426. I will pay what I have vowed, 5087. Salvation, 3444, is of Yahweh, and that is Yeshua. Verse 10, and you can reference 3 Maccabees, chapter 6, verse 8, for verse 10. And Yahweh spoke to the fish, and it vomited out, 6958, Yonah, upon the dry land. Now, I am sure at that point he was praying for a bath after being in the belly of a stinky fish. But that's just my opinion. I'm sorry. Ew. Verse 1 of chapter 3. And the word of Yahweh came to Yonah the second time, saying, verse 2, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and proclaim to it the proclamation that I say to you. And he said, yes, Yahweh. Verse 3. So Yonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of Yahweh. Now Nineveh was a mighty, that's 430. And that's not as divine, but of men, because 430 Elohim means mighty. It can also mean divine being in certain instances, but it also means mighty. Was a mighty and great city of 3 days' journey. In other words, it took you 3 days to walk across it, like we said before. Verse 4 and verses 4 and 5, you can reference the book of Matthew, chapter 12, verse 41, and the book of Luke, chapter 11, verse 32. And Yonah began, 2490, to enter into the city a day's journey. He walked for a day. And he cried, which means cried out, and said, yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Ooh. in an Assyrian city, a Hebrew was crying this out. Verse 5. So the people of Nineveh believed Elohim, in other words, the word of Elohim through Yonah, and proclaimed a fast, 6685, and put on, 3847, sackcloth, 8242, from the greatest to the least of them. That means the king on down to the guy that cleans the stables. Verse 6. For word came to the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne, and he passed away, 5674, in other words, took it off, his mantle, 1555, that's his royal garb, from upon him, and covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. That's a sign of humility. Verse 7. And he had it proclaimed to 199 and declared, 559, through Nineveh by the decree, 2940, of the king and his great ones. Those are all his co-rulers, the governors and precepts and judges and the military guys, all his great royalty, saying, now pay attention to this, folks. Let neither Adam nor beast, 929, herd, 1241, nor flock, 6629, taste anything, 2938, taste anything, 3972, do not let them feed, 7462, nor drink water. All right, now there's a separation in verse 7 between beasts, 929, and herds and flocks, because they're speaking of two-legged beasts there. They're slaves. Non-Adamic. And this tells you that the Assyrians were Adamic people at that point. Verse 8. But let Adam and beast be covered with sackcloth. Now, why would you put sackcloth on a cow? You wouldn't. And cry mightily, 2394, to Elohim. Can a cow or a goat or a sheep cry to Elohim? No. Yea, let every man, that's 376, that's male, male gender specific, turn from his evil way and from the violence, 2555, that is in their hands. 3709, what kind of beasts have hands? Two-legged beasts. Verse 9. Who can tell if Elohim will turn and change his mind, 5162, and turn away from his fierce, 2740, anger, so that we do not perish? And Elohim saw their works. 4639, the deeds that they did, that they turned from their evil way, and Elohim changed his mind of the harm, 7451, that can be used for many different things, that he had said he would do to them, and he did not do it. Okay, that ends chapter 3. Now, we've got four kinds of creatures mentioned here. Adam, beast, herd, flock. Beast in the Hebrew is a derogatory term for non-Adamic men. Herds are usually cattle, and flocks are sheep and goats. Verse 8 here is very clear that it has Adam and Beast wearing sackcloth, but not the animals. Adam and Beast do violence with hands, not animals. In verse 10, Adam and Beast turn from evil ways. Animals do not have evil ways. So this clearly shows that they are speaking of non-Adamic bipedal hominids. Okay, we're going to get into chapter 4 of Jonah. Jonah's not happy that Yahweh didn't lower the boom on Nineveh. He was sent all that way and he went through all that stuff. He had run off and got thrown into the sea in the middle of a storm and swallowed up by a fish and went through all this stuff. And now he's going to obey. And he expects Yahweh to kill everybody in Nineveh. That's what he was looking, you know, he hated the Assyrians. They were enemies. And he didn't really look for forgiveness for those people. Now, the forgiveness didn't last because eventually they were destroyed because they went back into apostasy. But so did Israel. But they were not of the chosen people. They were Adamites, but not Israel. So they were not under the covenant. They were still Adamic, you know, white people. They dominated the whole region. They were huge. So he was wanting Yahweh with the thunder and lightning and fire and brimstone and do the whole display, you know, boom, rumble, rumble, rumble. And then everything comes down and they're all shrieking and just like a Hollywood movie. No go. So he was not real happy. He didn't get his show that he was looking for. And Jonah hated the Assyrians. That's why he didn't want to go to Assyria. Why would I want to go and preach to them? And they're the enemy. Because I said so. Boom. How you like the fish belly? Smell good in there? Oh my. How foolish we are. How foolish we are. We always think we know better. And Jonah was no exception. You know, he thought, and he's going to pout and have a little hissy fit here in chapter 4. Just like the libtards are doing out there today. Oh, you racist Nazis, you're quoting the Bible. That's hate speech. They are so foolish, and they remind me of Jonah in so many ways. I mean, it just, they can't see the forest for the trees. All these miracles are going on right now, and things are changing, and their whole world is crumbling. Their Babylonian world is starting to fall. And they're going crazy. Well, they sit and they pout and they whine and they throw a hissy fit. Jonah's going to do the same thing in this chapter. So that's why he reminds me of the left-wing libtards of today. He didn't get his way, so he's going to pout. chapter 4, verse 1. But it displeased, 7489, Jonah to a great displeasure, 7451, and he was very angry, 2734. And here is verse 2. And verse 2 of chapter 4, you can reference Exodus 34, verse 6. And he prayed to Yahweh and said, I beseech you, 577, O Yahweh, was this not what I said when I was yet in my country? Therefore I fled before you, 6923, to Tarshish, because I knew that you were a gracious, 2587L, divine being, 410. Merciful, 7349. Slow to anger, 750 and 639. Literally, in the Hebrew, that means long of nose. And of great kindness, 2617. And regretful, 5162, of harm. I knew you were going to forgive these Assyrians. Verse 3. Therefore now, O Yahweh, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live. Wah, wah, wah. Verse 3, you can reference 1 Kings 19, verse 4. Then Yahweh said, verse 4, then Yahweh said, are you rightfully angry? Rightfully is 3190, and angry is 2734. Verse 5. So Jonah went out of the city and sat on the east side of the city, and there made him a booth, 5221, that's a sukkah, a brush shelter. That's what we stay in during the Feast of Tabernacles. It's the Feast of Sukkot booths. And sat under it in the shade, 6738, until he might see what would become of the city. Still hoping that Yahweh would destroy him. Well, maybe he'll change his mind and I get to watch all the destruction. Oh, poor Jonah. Verse 6, and Yahweh Elohim prepared, 4487, a gourd, 7021, and made it come up over Jonah. They have great big leaves, that it might be shade over his head to deliver him from his misery, 7451, another use for that word. So Jonah was greatly glad, 8057, for the gourd. Verse 7. But Elohim prepared a worm, 8438, when the morning rose the next day. And it smote the gourd, in other words, it chewed it in two, so that it withered, 3001, no shade. Here it comes, verse 8. And it came to pass, when the sun rose, that Elohim prepared a hot 2759 east wind. 2759 is unclear here, but hot is in context. It's a little iffy on the use of that particular word. And the east wind comes out of the desert, so it's hot. That's why hot is in context here. And the sun smote upon the head of Jonah, and he fainted, 5968, and desired, 7592, in himself to die, and said, it is better for me to die than to live. verse 9. And Elohim said to Yonah, are you rightfully angry for the gourd? And he said, I am rightfully angry unto death. Wah, 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 wah. Whiny. Verse 10. Then Yahweh said, you have had pity upon, 2, 3, 4, 7, the gourd, for which you have not labored, 5998, neither did you make it grow, 1431, which came to be in a night and perished in a night. Verse 11, and should I not have pity on Nineveh, the great city, in which are more than 120,000 Adami, people of the race of Adam. Adamites, not Canaanites, not Edomites, Adamites, but they weren't of Israel. All of Israel is of Adam, but not all of Adam is of Israel. Remember that. There were other people that were Adamic that were not chosen, but they are still Adamic people, and which are 120,000 Adami that cannot discern, 3045, that means to know, between their right hand, 3225, and their left hand, 8040, and many beasts, 929. These are non-Adamic men. Well, basically, Yonah was pouting. And Yahweh just shut him down. He says, look, you didn't bring, you're more worried about this gourd that you didn't do anything to bring about, that I gave you for a little shelter. You're more worried about that plant than 120,000 people of your own race in this city. You don't like their political structure. They're Assyrians, not Israelites, but they are still Adamites. Well, that applies to today. We've got all these Judeo-Christians out here with their head in the sand, and we've got a whole bunch of people that are worshiping Odin and doing all this other stuff, but they're still Adamites, and most of them are still Israel. So we need to be concerned about them, even though they are going against what we truly believe in. Now look, all of us have sinned. It said so in the Bible. Me too. I'm an old biker, an ex-con. I've sinned, okay? Big time. But Yahweh cared about me. Yahweh had mercy on me. Yahweh showed his love to me. Yahweh showed me the right way. Now, as sinners, and that includes all of us, all my listeners, shouldn't we care about those that don't know Yahweh yet? Shouldn't we tell them about Yahweh and Yeshua Messiah and the way out for them, the bailout that Yahweh has prepared like this gourd to give us shade? When Yeshua has given his life to cover our sins, shouldn't we care about those people? Somebody cared about us and told us the truth. Maybe several somebodies. Until it sunk in and we were converted. We see the light now. Do we want to hold it close and hide it under a basket, this light? Light of salvation, light of truth? No. No, 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 no. It does no good. It's a gift, and we need to give that gift away. Because the gift we have been given will continue to refresh itself and replenish itself. The more we give away, the more we're going to get to give away. And it just snowballs. We can't reject the lost because they're knuckleheads. We can't, because we were knuckleheads too, and some of us still are. I can be, believe me. I know. It's a daily battle for me against the world and my own flesh. Paul himself said, I die daily. He dies to the world daily. He has to pray for forgiveness daily. Well, so do I, and so do you. But who are we to stick our nose up in the air and be haughty and not care about these other Israelites? And they don't even know they're Israelites. They don't know. How can we not have mercy on them and tell them about the glories that we have experienced as converted Israelites? How can we not share that with them? Be so stingy. This is something we should want all our people to know. We should be shouting it from the rooftops. Not worrying about what's going to happen if we do. Don't be ashamed of our Messiah, or he will be ashamed of you before the Father. I said that in one of my sermon shows on Wake Up Call. And it holds true here. Jonah was not concerned about his fellow Adamites in that city. And a lot of us are not concerned about our fellow Adamites in our cities because they haven't already converted to Christian identity. That doesn't fly. It doesn't work. It says, the harvest is ready, but the workers are few. Yahweh wants willing workers and those who proclaim his order of arrangement to the world. That's how we fight the adversary. It's not a battle with guns right now. And Yahweh's going to take care of that. It's a battle of spirit. It's a spiritual battle. Our spirit, the spirit of Yahweh, against their spirit, the spirit of the devil. We are warriors in Yahweh's army already. And we are fighting the adversary already. It's in process. The battle is joined and it is going on. We cannot be so foolish as to think that we can sit on the sidelines, because if we do that, it will bring about our personal destruction, because these are all one-on-one personal choices. We choose to follow Yahweh. We choose to accept Yahshua as Redeemer. But if we don't do anything with it and we waste it, we will be like the dust that is shaken off the sandals, and the man will walk away. Well, you can walk away from your salvation. This once saved, always saved business is not true. Doesn't matter what little ritual you went through in a Judeo-Christian church. This is a daily battle that you must take up daily and fight daily while you are in your current fleshly temple that Yahweh has given you. We cannot relent and give up because the adversary's children never relent and they never give up. They are, if nothing else, relentless. They have no mercy and no regard. You cannot switch sides because they won't accept you. They hate you for what you are. And if you switch sides, they will use you as a tool and then throw you under the bus. They're not going to accept you and be good to you. They're going to laugh at you and use you and eventually destroy you. Because such is their nature. Their nature is a devilish nature from their forefather, the devil that seduced Eve in the Garden of Eden. They can't get away from that. That DNA shapes their nature. They're stuck with it. Oh, they can hide for a while, and they can manipulate through their media and their money, but eventually their nature will come out, and they will do their father's bidding, just like Yeshua the Messiah said, "You are of your father the devil, and your father's works you do." They can't help themselves. A pig is a pig. You can't make a pig into a golden eagle that can soar through the skies. It's a pig. It's nasty. It's dirty. It's unclean. It's a garbage eater, a scavenger. You can't change its nature. It is a pig. You can glue feathers to it, clean it up, wash it down, glue feathers to it, and say it's an eagle. But it's not an eagle. It's a pig with feathers glued on it. Well, we're dealing with the pig people today. They're the ones that hate us, want to destroy us, want to kill us. They're working real hard. They're working overtime. Don't kid yourself. They are serpent seeds. You can't make a serpent into anything else either. And that is what their father was, the serpent, the Nakash, one who whispers spells like a snake, a hiss of a snake. And it is in their DNA, and they are what they are, and they will never be able to change, no matter how little of that DNA is in them. It's there. And it's identifiable. And their heart can never be converted. They can proclaim to be Christians all the day long. And a lot of them do. They masquerade and teach false doctrine in the churches as pastors. But they're wolves in sheep's clothing. Beast of the earth. Serpent seed. The serpent race. The most race-mixed race on the planet. The racial soup with a seed of Cain in it, hidden. And their nature will out. And we are at constant warfare. And they have been whipping our butt for a long time because of their money power. Well, their money power is being broken as we speak. They're going into panic mode. All these sites on the internet that are exposing them. They're trying to shut them down left and right. But it's not going to succeed. There's too many of us, and it's too well known now. Their cover has been ripped off of them, their disguise. and the lights have been turned on and it's shining on them brightly and people are seeing them for what they are. And the hatred is growing again against the serpent seed people. People are beginning slowly but surely, to see who and what they are and what they have done. The history is being exposed and the truth is being told, and they are panicking. And as they panic, they will get increasingly violent. Not themselves, but they will pay to have it done. Because that's how they fight. Oh, Mossad may send a few hit teams here and there to get certain people. But in the majority, they're not much. They are thieves and liars and connivers and deceivers and plotters and perverters, corruptors, all the negatives. That's what they are. And they will hire, a lot of times, even white people to kill other white people. That's what all the wars have been about, white people killing white people. Reducing the number of the seed of Adam, and especially the seed of Jacob Israel. Even though they didn't know they were Jacob Israel at the time, and they thought they were doing patriotic duty, they were being slaughtered in another battle of the continuing war in heaven with the devil and his angels against Yahweh and his angels. And they are losing. Yahweh is going to destroy them. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1 verses 6 through 10 tells what happens when Yeshua Messiah comes back. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be pretty ugly. But not for the remnant. Not for the remnant of Israel that loves Yahweh and his son Yeshua. We are set apart people. We will not die the second death. That's one of the great promises that he made to us. That when Yeshua rose that third day, we rose with him. The last enemy that was conquered was death. These bodies will be changed or resurrected, one or the other. Doesn't matter which, we will be in glorified bodies, because Yahweh can do that. Our science can't, but he can. Because he is the divine being, and there is nothing beyond his power. We need to have faith in him and not lose faith during the time of the tribulation, and praise him in all things. So I'm about down to the end of the hour, and I'm going to say Shalom Aleichem. This was the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Praise Yahweh and praise Yeshua, our Messiah. May Yahweh bless and keep you.
Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going on before. Christ the royal master leads against the foe.